we welcome back to the program one of our favorites, David Roth of Deadspin, joins us. Hello there, David.
Hey, man. How are you?
I'm doing very well, but listen, confession is good for the soul. You need to be up front with us here. You wrote the letter to President Erdogan, didn't you?
Oh, my God. I've been getting a lot of notifications to this effect, and I don't know how to take this as a, you know, maybe, I suppose it's a compliment. That, like, whenever Trump writes something really Trumpy and really dumb, everyone's like, this sounds like you, man. And that's kind of a weird one to wear. But the letter itself is pretty dumb, pretty Trumpy. I like, my favorite part of it is not the don't be a tough guy, don't be a fool part, which is, you know, it's everybody's favorite part. I understand it. It's the one where he reaches for like a really grandiose phrasing about like you will be remembered as the devil, and it's just like it's the perfect attempt to like sort of get eloquent from a guy that like knows 105 words. Just really delightful writing.
I love the confrontation, you know, don't be a fool, and then he wraps it up with I will call you later.
I'll talk to you later. Don't worry about it. It's terrific. Thanks so much. I think a lot of people are going to misinterpret that as idiotic when it's really a level of deal craft that most normal people wouldn't be able to understand.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's the art of the deal. He's taken it to a whole new level, as always. Why is it, Mr. Roth? I ask you because you're a very bright man. You're a talented writer. What is it that has allowed you to get inside his brain, to at least help us understand a little bit of how he operates?
That's nice of you to say in this context. I'm just going to rule out the, you know, leave the Trump part out of it and take the compliment. I think, I don't think I have any great insight into him beyond the one, which is just always taking everything he does at face value. But I think that there's this tendency with him, and certainly in terms of talking about him, you know, there's all these people who make very good livings talking about politics, you know, all day long on television and in newspapers and whatever. And it's their job to sort of analyze things and to tell their readers or their viewers, like, what's really happening behind the sort of theatrical presentation that you see. And I think with Trump, there's never subtext. There's never anything there that is, like, he's just not capable of hiding things very well because he's not, you know, the sharpest dude at this stage in his life. And so I think that, like, when, you know, when he lies, it's never a clever lie. It's just exactly the opposite of what is actually the truth. Like, when he says something like, no puppet, you're the puppet, whatever, stuff like that. But like, that's not really like, that's not a good zinger. Like, it's just the sort of thing where like he's panicking and the only thing he can think of is to accuse the other person of the thing that he actually did.
Oh, right. It always comes down to I know you are, what am I?
Yeah. And so as long as you don't go beyond that like 9-year-old brain, you're never really going to be wrong. I think where people get confused about him is where they start being like, well, what game is he playing? What angle is Trump working here? And like, there's never an angle. He's sitting 6 inches from his television yelling at it. Like, that's all it is. It is exactly what it appears to be.
As always, he has surrounded himself with such a bizarre cast of characters. You're a New Yorker. Did you see this coming from Rudy Giuliani?
He's really been, he's been surprising me of late. I had no real illusions about Rudy. I mean, like, I'm not a fan, and I never really have been. And he's always been a surpassingly weird guy. Like, even by the standards of, like, New York City and state have elevated some pretty weird lawyers to power. Like, if you accept, like, Elliot Spitzer at the baseline, like, there's some real, like, kind of dark, horny, troubled guys. And Giuliani was always, you know, in the weirdest 5% of those. But something seems to have happened in the last few years where he's both, like, constantly feeling himself. So he's, like, always out there being like, yeah, go ahead, subpoena me. What are you going to do? Enforce it? And I think that that's one of those things where, like, for one thing, he's a lawyer. So, like, yes, that's what they're going to do. But also, like, another guy where it's impossible to see what he's trying to do. He's just kind of balling out of control.
What's so bizarre, I mean, I'm old enough to remember the Iran-Contra scandal, and at least that shadow government operating out of the basement of the White House at least was run by a guy with some sort of military experience, crazy though he may have been, in Oliver North. But I'm picturing Rudy as the brains of this international conspiracy.
That's what's so sort of bracing about all of this. And I think that, you know, obviously the caveat with all of this is, like, it's funny provided we all make it through it. And, like,
yes,
obviously, you know, I hope we all make it through it. But back to the funny part, the last couple of weeks with all these, like, the photos and the videos of Trump hanging out with those two Ukrainian bumblers that, like, got in trouble with this, where he's just, like, sitting in some cigar bar cutting, like, a personal message to one of their uncles on one of these guys' phones. Like, that's it's not the sort of thing where, like, again, you know, we get conditioned by this idea of, like, Watergate stuff where, you know, these guys are scheming in smoke-filled rooms or whatever. And, like, the smoke part is right because they're all, like, smoking cigars. But they're just, like, a bunch of weird, drunk 70-something guys, like, having conversations about how good they are at golf. Like, it's all so shabby and dorky that, again, like, it, hopefully this will at least, like, remove some illusions from how this stuff actually works.
And
but
it's like
these guys are really very good at their job.
It's like the whole thing was cast by Tarantino, including Rudy as the guy whose best years were 20 years ago, but Tarantino brought him back for this cameo to revitalize his career.
I think, yeah, I mean, I agree with the Tarantino. I mean, certainly, like, this is disrespectful to Robert Forster. But yes, there's a little bit of that in there. I think if you were going to go with the casting thing, there's in the movie Bottle Rocket, Owen Wilson recruits a safecracker named Applejack for his gang, played by Kumar Palana, who is in all of his other movies. And it's clear that Kumar's maybe not that good a safecracker, but when the time comes for them to bust into the safe, it turns out that not only did Kumar not do it, he somehow got lost and locked himself in a freezer. And when they go to get him, he says, "I lost it, man." And Owen Wilson says, "Did you ever have it to lose?" And so I think if you had to cast this, I wouldn't want to see a Wes Anderson version of the Trump White House, but I think I know where I would cast Kumar.
One of my other favorites, because he's just so consistent in his approach to everything, is the man who doesn't own a blazer, Representative Jim Jordan.
Oh, I love that stuff. He always looks like a college basketball coach whose team just got blown out.
Yes.
Like, he's got that real kind of, like, desperate, clammy vibe. Like, he's, like, getting a question from a student newspaper writer that he doesn't have any respect for. It's weird with him, too, because that's another guy where, you know, it doesn't seem to me like he's maybe the brightest dude. But there is, with him, like, he had a whole, like, tweet storm, I remember, last week, where he was kind of, like, you know, doing the Trump thing of asking a bunch of questions that you don't know the answers to, and that maybe the answers are not really important. You know, why was Hunter Biden here? Like, does it matter that he's left-handed? Like, all of this stuff that was just kind of so clearly a smokescreen and so officially executed that at the end of it, you were just kind of, like, I don't, like, maybe worried for his loved ones, like, just sort of being like, I know that, like, Dad's been acting weird. Like, I think maybe you should take him to Applebee's or something. Like, he seems really upset.
We're talking to David Roth here on Downtown, and as we like to say, it would be even funnier if it were somebody else's country. But let's move into the sports world, where things are perfectly normal. What the heck happened with
the
NBA and China? How did they screw this up?
Oh, boy. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, I think that whatever was behind Daryl Morey's initial co-signing of what seems to me a perfectly blameless sentiment on behalf of Hong Kong, you know, whether it's good business or bad business, you just can't be in business with China and not eventually have to, you know, bend the knee, lick the boot, whatever the metaphor you like is. So watching it sort of happen and to see these sorts of, like, weird realpolitik, not just from Stephen A, but from LeBron, you know, people that where they're talking about, you know, other people's livelihoods and various considerations and stuff, beyond the fact that, like, all the sort of high-flown rhetoric points out the fact that these people are basically like, I don't have time for human rights violations, I got a job to do, you know, like, we're on to the Sacramento Kings. Like, that's not really a very solid ethical stance. But to me, it's the same way you see this with a lot of the stories that I've had to edit about WWE doing business with Saudi Arabia, which they're doing a lot. There's a big pay-per-view there in a couple weeks. That the only way that you can come out of a deal like that unsullied is to never enter it in the first place, which I realize does not grammatically scan as a sentence, but you understand the hope what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Like, just the compromises required to go in the first place mean that eventually you're going to have to either turn your back on whatever values you have, which for most corporate entities is not the biggest ask in the world, or you're going to have to, you know, humiliate yourself.
The corporation, the NBA, being willing to bend the knee to China doesn't surprise me in the least little bit. The comments from LeBron James, though, surprised me quite a bit, because he has a history of sort of, you know, the supporting the underdog and stuff like this. And I mean, the reasoning is there. I understand the reasoning probably with the Nike contract and such, but that did surprise me.
Yeah, it was disappointing in a way that I think, and I don't think it suggests that the other politics that he's espoused are insincere. Like, I don't believe that this means that he doesn't, you know, believe what he has said he believes about, for instance, that, like, police brutality, issues like that we have. It just seems like it kind of points up the limits of that type of liberal politics. Like, liberal in the, not in the, like, political science,
right.
Just in the way that we've come to understand it in, like, since the Bill Clinton-style liberalism, where you're attentive to immediate issues, domestic issues or whatever, but you're also so, you know, inclined to do business above other concerns that basically, like, I think that contradiction in values, the idea that a guy that can talk about how every life matters here and then just sort of, like, callously write off, you know, what China does and what they've done for many years, that I don't think that conflict is clear to him, because I think it's not clear to a lot of people that believe stuff like that, but it's real. And when you see it, it's really jarring and sort of hard to get past.
David, it's 100 years since the Black Sox scandal of 1919. I'm watching the St. Louis Cardinals Washington Nationals series. I felt like history was repeating itself. Were they meeting somewhere with gamblers? What was that all about?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, right? I mean, like, I didn't think the Cardinals were that good. And certainly them getting past the Braves surprised me a lot. You know, as a Mets fan, I watch the Braves a lot, and I watch the Nats a lot this season, mostly watching them beat the Mets. But, like, I thought the Braves were really good. I didn't really think the Nats were that good. And I didn't think the Cards were necessarily that good, but that's a easier division to play in. The thing that were, well, not really, slightly. But, yeah, wow, when it fell apart, it all fell apart. I mean, it was just weird to see, because after all these years of the Cardinals going into the playoffs with rosters like that, you know, like, super flawed. Like, they won 86 games or something like that when they won the World Series in 2006 or whatever it was, that this wasn't even a good team. And yet, like, every postseason, there's this kind of weird, you know, what they call the Cardinals devil magic on Twitter. And then just to watch it all not just peter out, but, like, just be claimed by the other team and directed against them. I mean, the Nats, I have no idea if the Nats are actually this good, but, man, the Cardinals sure made me, like, convinced that they could win a World Series somehow.
Yeah, and I guess I'm excited for the Nationals. I like some of the guys on the team. I'm happy to see them there.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I think because they're a rival of a team I care about, and then also because they have that kind of creepy DC fan base, you know, where it's like there's like a decent chance that you're going to see Brett Kavanaugh being like, yeah, in the stands in the game. And, like, that's a buzzkill for me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really need to see that. But the team itself is very likable. The players are likable. Like, I find Max Scherzer really fun to watch, as long as I can tune out the different colored eyes thing. Like, it's all, you know, there's good stuff there. It's just, I don't know what chance they stand against either the Astros or the Yankees, but I don't have to worry about that.
So did the Angels apparently not pay attention to what happened to the Cubs this year?
I mean, in terms of Joe Madden as Joe Madden, I don't really know, you know, if it's the sort of thing where you just, it's, you know, you hit the reset button and he starts and rebuilds the culture and he does what he did for the Cubs, you know, from 2014 on or whatever, then who knows, maybe it's a good hiring, but he sure seemed like a spent force this year, and the Cubs were, I mean, I don't know. It takes a while for a clubhouse to tune a guy out. It seems like it almost always happens. It's just one of those deals where, I mean, I don't know what the Angels expected from their team this year. Like, I don't know that you could say who their manager is, Brad Ausmus, right?
Right.
Somebody like that.
Who lasted 1 year.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't know that you could really say he did an especially good or bad job. I mean, they just had this exceptionally star-crossed season. All the stuff that's come out about the Tyler Skaggs death and the story of the team knowing about how he was getting his opiates and all that stuff, that, like, that all of that stuff suggests that there's a lot more work to be done than, like, putting a new coat of paint on the clubhouse and bringing in a new manager. But, of course, it's easier just bring in a new manager.
Well, yeah, even John Farrell, who's been out on a lobster boat apparently for a couple of years, is back interviewing for jobs. So yeah. What goes around comes around.
I'm really fascinated by the guys whose names I've seen sort of tossed around. I know that a lot of it, when you see stuff like that, is just beat writers sort of doing favors for their guys.
Mm.
You know? Like, there was that Bob Nightingale from USA Today had made a point of tweeting that Curt Schilling is very interested in being the manager of the Phillies or the pitching coach for the Red Sox. And honestly, I'm sure he is. I think I have the same chance of getting that job that he does. So, you know, I would say that I'm also interested. It pays better than Deadspin and it seems like more stable work.
I think you sort of, you have a much better shot that just based on your Twitter feeds alone.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I have a terrible account. But I'm generally able to keep the anti-trans meme to a bare minimum, which is something that Kurt struggled with since like 2009.
All right. I feel better about the world already, as I do every time
really?
We talk. Yeah, I do in a twisted sort of way. So, David, we appreciate
Thanks,
it. As always, keep fighting the good fight. We love your work and love it when you visit with us. Can't wait to do it again soon.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
You too. David Roth, Deadspin, here on Downtown.